This is Amy Brown from Feeling Things with Amy and Kat. Back to school season always feels like a fresh start, not just for kids, but for all of us. It's a great reminder to create new routines and find meaningful ways to connect with our family, friends, and community. Hasbro Games make it easy to gather around the table. Put the screens away, share some laughs, and create joyful memories together. Whether it's Monopoly, Connect Four, Guess Who, or another family favorite, there's something for everyone. You can find these and other Hasbro favorites at your local Walmart, walmart.com, or simply tap the link in today's show notes to bring more play into your week.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. Your voice of truth and reason across this great nation, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. By the way, got word in earlier today from our from my publisher over at Humanix, and Thursday book numbers come out, and thousands of you have already purchased the Golden Age. You know what's interesting about book sales? Not a lot of people read books anymore. You know, it used to be where, I mean, that was, everybody had a library, everybody was reading their books, and I mean, just, so you would normally think in the past, maybe in the 80s and 90s, you know, tens of thousands of people were reading books. Now only thousands of people are reading books. So we want to encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to get a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. They are incredibly excited about opening week book sales. And I want to thank all of you guys who have gone out there and you have purchased a copy of The Golden Age. We have been doing around the clock interviews, and by around the clock, I literally mean around the clock. I was up at, started at 8 o'clock this morning, literally just got off with our last interview and hopped on the radio show. So it's been a lot of fun. We've been doing a lot of radio shows, talking to a lot of hosts around the country, and we really do appreciate that. And it means a lot, especially because, you know, we're a grassroots operation. You know, we're not like Cumulus and Bongino. They've got all the, or Clay and Buck, you know, they've got the power of iHeart behind them. And many radio stations are forced to carry their content. The stations that carry our show want to carry us, and we are so incredibly thankful and grateful for that. I want to start out today, and just a heads up, this is a story that really bothers me. It's a case involving a Massachusetts mom. She's a nurse, works in the delivery room. Her name is Lindsay Clancy. And there's some very bizarre things happening with this case. So here's the story. Mrs. Clancy, three young children, little Cora, 5 years old, Dawson, 3 years old, and Callan, 8 months old. One day, Mrs. Clancy asked her husband to go out, and he happens to be a medical professional, and to go out and run some errands. The husband was happy to do that, and he ran some errands and was going to pick up the family dinner. And while he was out, she took the children into the basement. There were some exercise bands, and she took those exercise bands and she strangled her three children. She killed her three children, this monster mom. This happened in the town of Duxbury, Massachusetts, very affluent suburb of Boston. And the prosecution says that this woman knew exactly what she was doing and that she went out of her way to plan and plot the murders of her own children. The defense, on the other hand, claims that there was something else at play, that she was suffering from a mental illness, that she was bipolar, and she was suffering from something which is incredibly rare, something called postpartum psychosis. And they say that she should not be held criminally responsible for killing her kids. Now, the New York Times has been covering the case, and they say that she has frequently broken down crying in the courtroom. Many of the jurors as well showing emotion. Mrs. Clancy's former mother-in-law described her as being very nurturing and very loving. Medical professionals have described her symptoms of postpartum depression, saying she made two calls to a suicide hotline. By the way, the husband, Mr. Clancy, divorced. They're no longer together. So she's facing three counts of first-degree murder. She only faces a life sentence in prison without parole. But if she's found not guilty by reason of insanity, this woman could be walking the streets having more babies that she could kill. But again, the prosecutors, and they've got more than 70 witnesses, they say that she was very careful in how she planned out the killings. She plotted to get her husband out of the house, and then she choked her kids to death. The assistant district attorney said she knew exactly what she was doing. Meanwhile, outside the courtroom, more than 200 woke white women, all wearing pink shirts, are literally applauding and cheering on the mom. They say that she should be set free. I don't see anybody out there supporting the poor dead children. No, they all believe that Mrs. Clancy is the victim here. What gets me is this woman had, I mean, she was a nurse. What's up with the nurses? Have you noticed this? A lot of the nurses are coming out woke. Many of them are going on social media, TikTok, saying how they would never treat Trump supporters. If they had a male patient, they might, you know, hurt the male patient. I mean, there's some crazy stuff going on. Kevin Reddington is Miss Clancy's lawyer and says that she had been in the throes of a mental health crisis and was over-medicated for severe postpartum mental illness. He also said she was hearing voices that ordered her to kill herself and her children. Let me stop right here for a moment. Why didn't she kill herself then? I mean, if the voice was saying, all right, you need to go kill your kids, and then you kill yourself, she killed the kids, why didn't she kill herself? I'd be asking that question. However, doctors say there was no record of Mrs. Clancy telling healthcare providers about hearing voices until after the children's death. And all of a sudden now, she's hearing voices. Mrs. Clancy said she feared the state would remove her children from her care if she displayed severe symptoms. Well, yes, the state should have. Maybe the children would still be alive. So anyway, this woman was a labor and delivery nurse at a Boston hospital, and they say she had experienced anxiety after the births of her first two kids. Mr. Clancy argued that clinicians failed to monitor her reactions to medications, and he's filing a lawsuit, by the way. There was a daily record, a handwritten record that Mrs. Clancy kept documenting her symptoms. Horrible, intrusive thoughts. That's what one entry read. So the question here, ladies and gentlemen, what do you do? Mr. Clancy delivered a written statement in support of his wife. He said, my family was the best thing that ever happened to me. He says that his wife has been unfairly portrayed by people who never met her and never knew who the real Lindsay was. Well, sir, it could be that maybe, just maybe, their impressions are, I don't know, colored by the fact that she killed your three children, sir. Just pointing that out. Mr. Clancy said, I want to ask all of you that you find it deep within yourselves to forgive Lindsay as I have. The real Lindsay was generously loving and caring towards everyone. Now, they say about one in seven women is affected by postpartum depression. but research has been slow to investigate the causes. And of course, what was it? Remember that the case of the Texas mom? It was like 20 years ago. She drowned her 5 kids. She was found not guilty by reason of insanity. So anyway, this issue has really divided the conservative community. You have Matt Walsh and Ben Shapiro going at it. And this is, it cracks me up. They don't name names. This is really funny. That's so beta male to me. Dylan, if you're going to call somebody out, call somebody out. Right? Well, there's someone I know who's a conservative Jewish guy who owns a certain publication, and he said very unkind things to me, but I'm not going to say who it is. And then on the other side, well, there's this guy with a beard who has a podcast. Just say who you're talking about, for crying out loud. Be men. Anyway, Daily Wire host Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh are going at it. And they're exchanging all these barbs. Walsh says a lot of people aren't going to want to hear this, but much of the depression that parents and not just moms suffer after childbirth is due not so much to hormones, but to the fact that children, especially babies, are demanding and difficult and require us to subordinate our own needs and desires for their sake. The more selfish you are, the more of an adjustment it's going to be. And Shapiro blasted Matt Walsh and saying, even if you had the fleeting thought you don't like your kids or this is annoying and I wish my kids weren't here, this is not the same thing that happened. According to Lindsay Clancy, and people around her are saying the same thing. According to her, voices were telling her to murder her children. So please don't conflate these things because that's stupid. And for any men and a few women who are saying that postpartum depression generally is somehow lack of willpower or doesn't cause people to do violent things or that postpartum depression is because of the selfishness of modern women, please, please stop being a moron. But again, I go back to this. Fine, okay, you've got a voice telling you, kill your kids, kill yourself. You kill your kids, but you don't kill yourself. Were you really listening to the voice? I really, that's what gets me here. So anyway, I'm curious to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen. Do you think this mom has a case? And what does it say about society where you've got 200 woke white women wearing pink shirts outside the courthouse, and they're saying that the real victim here, not the three dead kids, not the three dead kids, but it's the mom. And I want you to hear me on this. And this is where I think this woman did it, and I think she knew exactly what she was doing. It's not like you put a gun to the head of the kid and blew the child's brains out. You strangled your child to death. You strangled your child to death. Do you know how long that takes? Not just one, not just two, but three kids. Ladies and gentlemen, shocking, just shocking. But again, you're talking about several minutes that it takes to strangle a child. And you're telling me that woman didn't know what she was doing? I don't believe it for one second. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. And by the way, what does it say about our society that we live in right now? What a strange time where we celebrate those who kill. I mean, we just, Carmelo Anthony, at this very moment, there are protests in Texas defending Carmelo Anthony for stabbing a young white boy to death, Luigi Mangione. We've been following that story. What about the Tsarnaev brothers? Jokar Tsarnaev, celebrated as some sort of a rock star for blowing up the Boston Marathon. These people are worshipped as heroes and celebrities for killing. There is evil in this country, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Todd Stern Show.
When a nation drifts, the church faces a choice: silence or courage. This weekend, Salem News Channel's America 250 film series presents Letter to the American Church. Based on Eric Metaxas' warning to believers, this film challenges Christians to recover conviction, truth, and moral courage. Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Salem News Channel.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. You know, a lot of these moms that showed up outside of the courthouse to defend this maternal killer, this monstrous woman, many of them brought their own kids. And it just seems to me, if you're a dad and you see your wife, you see your maybe your ex-wife, and they're out there with the children, I would immediately go to court to claim custody of the kids. Get those kids away from those women, because you never know, somebody in that crowd might turn and kill their own kids. I mean, if you're going to be out there defending baby killers, I got no respect for that at all. I mean, could you imagine? And some of these moms drag their kids along and they're like, "Mommy, mommy, why are we here? Mommy, why are we standing outside the courthouse?" And could you imagine, as a kid, your mom looks down at you with like this demented look on her face and says, "Be quiet. We're here to support a murderer." And you're like peeing yourself. I mean, because you're a child. And your mommy, that's incredible. That's what's going on right now up in Massachusetts. By the way, in Massachusetts, the governor, again, surrounded by all these woke women, signing into law, you can now abort your child on the day of its birth in Massachusetts. I mean, could you imagine giving, you're there at dad, you're in the room, and your wife is about to give birth, and all of a sudden the baby's coming out, and your wife says, "You know, doc, I'm just not ready. Let's just go ahead and whack the kid now." And they kill your kid right in front of your eyes. That is now legal in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Unbelievable the amount of evil in that state. Let's go to Memphis, Tennessee. KWAM. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, greetings, Todd. You were talking the other day about the Gals of Girth, and I unfortunately had a sighting of one. I'll have to acknowledge that it was very distressing on my part. They're out there. They're real. But there's a good, if there's a positive to this, now they've got a state that they can move to. So if they really want to eliminate their children, they have a place they can go. So they don't need to stay in Tennessee and keep complaining. But regarding the woman who's obviously going to face a trial, I guess, I did a little bit of research while I was waiting. And 2 months before she murdered her children, she was put on SSRIs. And if you look at every one of the mass school shootings, every one of these shooters were on SSRIs. That's a serotonin reuptake inhibitive drug that has as a listed side effect homicidal tendencies. Those need to be eliminated. They need to be removed because the pharmaceutical companies make so much money, and it's a way they can claim as a basis to eliminate guns and confiscate guns. We have to have people out there. I'm 65. I grew up in a time where people were fighting, but they never shot anybody. People had guns in the gun racks in the back of the parking lot at school. I carried a .22 rifle down the halls of school in Memphis to go to ROTC rifle team shooting. So, you know, the times were different, and what I see is the drugs that people are being put on systematically are a great cause of most of these problems, not all, but
well,
most.
Let me say this, Mike, and I agree with you there on that, and we're up against a hard break here. But here's my take on it. If, in fact, these drugs are causing people to do this, then the makers of the drugs need to be charged with murder as well. We got to start playing hardball here, folks, if, in fact, that is the case. All right, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. You know, they tell you the only way to retire with enough money is to put your life savings into a 401k or IRA and just roll the dice on Wall Street. But what if there's a better way? It's time to get the truth and discover a better way to grow and protect your money. Bank on Yourself is the proven retirement plan alternative banks in Wall Street desperately hope you never hear about. It gives you guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income, tax-free retirement income, and more control over your money. You'll know the minimum guaranteed value of your retirement savings at every point along the way, and you can access your money before age 59 and a half without government penalties. You can get a free report that reveals how you can bank on yourself and access your money income tax-free in retirement, enjoy guaranteed growth, and have more control over your money. A Bank on Yourself professional can answer any of your questions. Just go to bankonyourself.com/starns and take back control of your financial future. That's bankonyourself.com/starns. All right. Welcome back. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. What an honor to have you with us today. By the way, this segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. Millions of Americans are making the switch to Newsmax. President Trump has, and you should too. They're watching great shows with Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, Finnerty, and more. If you are tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. Get all of President Trump's most important events live, including some great documentaries from Mike Huckabee and his Israel special to Melania Trump. Once you start Newsmax Plus, you will not stop. So try it for free. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com and then download the app for free. All right, let's go to the phone lines. 901-260-5926. Susan in Cleveland, Georgia. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was on earlier and I had to hop off, but I'm back. Are you still talking about the woman who
killed
her?
Yeah, go right ahead, Susan.
Okay, so quickly, because it may call me in a second. I'm so upset about that. And when you told me that the women were outside applauding it, it just blew my mind. And I thought to myself, I wouldn't want to be in a room with those women because I think they've got problems, too, just like that woman had. And, I mean, I don't think those kids deserve to be executed. I'm not sure what this lady's fate is going to be, if she will be given the death sentence for what she did or just put in jail for the rest of her life or possibly be let out in a few years. I'm not sure I'm liking that option. I think this woman has committed a heinous crime, and those children, like I said, it breaks my heart, strangling them. You know, one at a time. I mean, where were the other two when she did the first one and the second one and the third one? What a trauma for the rest of, I mean, if any of them had survived, what a trauma for the rest of their lives to have seen her kill a sibling. But anyway.
Susan, no, you're right. By the way, the death penalty, they don't have that in Massachusetts. So all she can get is life in prison unless they find her, you know, mentally insane. Then she gets hospitalized. She's back out on the streets, and I would have to imagine other children's lives could be in danger.
Of course. And, you know, I'm from Massachusetts. I'm sorry. I'm not proud of the fact that they operate the way they do on a lot of different things, you know, even the abortion thing. But this is just outrageous. I don't know what else. I don't know how else to put it, but it's outrageous to me.
And it's not just. And, Susan, it's not just that they're out there, you know, standing out there supporting, they're cheering, they're holding rallies like it's some sort of a pep rally here. We're talking about a woman who admits to killing a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old child, Susan.
That's disgusting. I'm sorry. And the husband, I'm not sure, I haven't followed it too closely. Where is he in all of this?
Yeah, he's asking for people to be understanding and know the Lindsay that he knew. Well, you know what? That's in the past. We need to be dealing with the Lindsay that just killed her 3 children. That's the one we need to be focused on.
Yeah, and he's trying to be the good husband. I'm not sure if I can't understand that. I think I'd be so upset that I don't know if I'd ever want to see her again the rest of my life.
Yeah.
If I were hit.
Yeah, they're legally divorced now. All of this happened back in 2023. That's when the children were killed. So the trial continues. But, Susan, it is. I think it really says a lot about who the American people are and the lack of empathy here. The idea that you're going to go out there and celebrate a murderer, unbelievable.
Yep. Okay, thanks for listening.
All right, Susan, thank you. Appreciate it. 901-260-5926. Let's go to Clear Lake City, Texas. Mike, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Mike, what's on your mind today?
Well, first, I want to say thanks for taking my call, but welcome back.
Thank you.
A breath of fresh air in a dark and dying world. Now, to me, when you look at the governor signing the abortion bill and this woman doing what she did, and now the people not protesting, but in support of her outside the courtroom, to me, all of this is straight-up demon possession. That's the only thing that explains it.
It's the only thing that can explain it, Mike. I mean, the idea that you can kill your baby on the day of its birth, that is demonic.
That's what I'm saying. That the human mind, I mean, you go back to the early days of Roe versus Wade. I mean, the human mind would not conceive such a thing, killing off its own offspring. But to do it on the day of birth, and then what's transpired in the last week in Massachusetts, you know, it's like you've opened a portal to the other side and the demons are coming through.
They sure are. And it looks like that portal was right there at the state capitol in Boston, Mike.
Well, then what does that say to the citizenry of Massachusetts? You know, evil leaders is going to rain on everybody, not just, you know, it rains on the righteous as well as the unrighteous.
Well, no doubt about that. Of course, Mike, you've got your own demons there in Texas. James Tallarico, who is running for, you know, the U.S. Senate down there, claiming that it's deeply immoral to teach kids about Bible studies, that God is non-binary, that Jesus is not the only way to heaven. That, my friend, is just as demonic.
He's a front. He's a puppet to somebody. I doubt very seriously even he believes half the stuff that comes out of his mouth. He's pushing an agenda for someone or something else. To me, all of that's not coming out of his head.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right about that. Mike, thank you for calling in. Thanks for the kind words. Great to be back behind the microphone. By the way, folks, on Sunday, I'll be at the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Our book tour taking us to our good friend, Dr. Robert Jefferson, his incredible church. Barnes & Noble will be handling the book signings. We're going to be doing book signings after each service there at the First Baptist Church. And we would love for you to come out, enjoy a morning of incredible worship with us, listen to God's word being preached. And then afterwards, I'd be honored to be able to meet you, shake your hand, and sign a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. That's this coming Sunday, both morning worship services at the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. All right, let's go to Ron in Statesville, North Carolina, WSIC. Ron, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good talking to you. Just wanted to make a quick comment. I think at least ways these children got the opportunity. Now we know they're in heaven. And had they been raised by these idiots, I don't think they would have been in. Maybe they wouldn't have had that option. I don't know if you. Hello?
Yes, sir. I'm listening to you, Ron.
Yes. Okay. Do you understand what I'm saying? They murdered their children, and that's they need to pay for that, and I agree. I wish they had the death penalty, but they don't. But at least ways you can think that the children are in heaven with God.
Well, I will say this. The Bible teaches that every soul is immortal, including those of children. Salvation comes through faith in Christ. And God's grace extends to those who cannot yet make a choice, and that would be a child. And I know this. I just went to one of our great sponsors, Dr. Michael Youssef, My Faith Assistant. If you go to My Faith Assistant online, you'll be able to type in your question. Do children go to heaven when they die. And according to My Faith Assistant, this is a ministry of Dr. Michael Youssef, a child who dies has not rejected Christ. They simply have not reached an age of moral accountability where they can understand sin and make a conscious decision about their faith. So to your point, yes, Dr. Michael Youssef agrees with you. Again, if you have any questions about what the Bible says about the big important issues of the day, go to myfaithassistant.com. That's myfaithassistant.com, and you'll be able to type in your question like we just did, and Dr. Youssef will provide you with a Bible-based answer to your question. Ron, thank you for calling in, and thank you for that. Thank you for those thoughts. Let's go to Houston. Steve, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Hi, Steve. What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. How are you doing today? You know, this situation, the reason I'm a conservative, because back in the old days, if you stole somebody's horse, they could get a rope and hang you right there on the spot. And, you know, it wasn't to punish the person. It was to show the next person, if you do this, I would hate to see what they would do to somebody who killed some kids or something. And again, I mean, in this instance, you know, the next lady that gets tired of feeding her kids and taking care of them, you know, she's going to look at what happens to this lady here. So, you know, I just think, you know, we used to, it was our morality that kept us from doing this stuff. But I think with all the media and the hopped up programming that people get in the movies, everything, we're losing our culture. And that's the biggest threat. It's not China. It's not, any other country. And the founder said that this country would be destroyed from within if it was destroyed.
You know,
I think that's what we're seeing.
Steve, I think you're onto something there. And again, I look at what's happening in Massachusetts, which is really a godless state. When you look at what happened at the state capitol just a few days ago, the governor signing the legislation allowing moms to kill their children on the day of their birth. You've got this trial going on. Hundreds of women are outside the courthouse cheering this baby killer on. I mean, by the way, the woman, the defense here acknowledges that she killed her children. That's not in dispute at all. So she really is a monstrous mother killer. And this is... look, these people are celebrating her. That tells me that that is a godless society. That is debauchery. That is immorality. That is almost as if you were sacrificing your children, which is what they did in the pagan times. So this is nothing new. It's been happening, you know, in the world for generations, but it really is shocking to the system. And it's a reminder, Steve, that Christians have a responsibility to engage the culture. And when we do not engage the culture, very bad, evil things happen.
I don't understand the husband because, to be honest, I mean, I don't know that if my wife killed my kids, I don't think she'd make it to trial.
Yeah.
That's where I stand on it. I mean, I could not live the rest of my life knowing that my wife killed my kids.
I think, look, a capital punishment has to be on the table. Obviously, it's not because that's illegal in the state of Massachusetts. They provide coverage for killers there. But there was a time, as you pointed out, that people were punished for crimes, and it was very public. And the reason why was to warn people, if you do this, if you engage in this kind of behavior, there is a price to pay. And I do wonder if we need to bring back public executions as a reminder, and maybe, just maybe, that'll cut down on all of this stuff. Steve, I got to run, but thank you for that call. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Hey, before your Q3 call, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Great. Did you include the differentiation angle the CMO asked for?
Already in there. Three angles no competitor's using right now. Just need your approval.
Approved. Thanks. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
All right. Any of you guys follow, Dylan, you follow folks on X, on social media?
Just in general, do I follow folks?
Yeah, Cat Turd. Do you follow
Cat
Turd?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Cat Turd's a great American patriot. Unusual name.
It is an unusual name.
But it does. It's catchy.
It's good content.
A Cat Turd apparently bought 50 copies of The Golden Age.
Oh, gosh.
So thank you.
Hey.
Well, you got to have something to read when you're in the litter box.
Oh, yeah, so what absolutely. That's awesome.
I just say. All right. 901-260-5926. Thank you, Cat Turd. We really appreciate it. Also, we understand Senator Brent Taylor, who is running for the 9th Congressional District in the great state of Tennessee. He bought an entire case of books, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And one of the people in the book, by the way, is actually on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line right now. We feature the story of Jacob York, who is a great American patriot, great athlete. Jacob, we understand you're watching us today on Rumble. First of all, great to have you with us. And a surprise, did you know that you were in the Golden Age?
Yeah, I'm glad I got my copy yesterday. I remember you had mentioned it last time I was on the show when I was like, there's no way I got a pre-order copy. So I was happy to find that yesterday and had to post it on X and then get you a shout out.
Well, you're a great American patriot, Jacob, and we're just so proud of you and the great work you are doing reaching the younger generation. And hope school's going well for you.
Yeah, I actually go back to school on Saturday, so I'm excited to get the semester going. We got some great turning point events coming down the pipeline. I'm really excited.
Well, that's fantastic. Jacob, I know you didn't call just to chew the fat. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I actually decided to call in after hearing the last guest talk, and I think there's a problem in America right now that people don't fear the justice in America. Their actions don't have weight in their opinion. They can say whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. I think a perfect example of this is how illegal immigration was handled during the Biden administration. People came across the border with zero repercussions at all. And then as soon as we start having the beginning of mass deportations, then people were all up in arms and super scared of what's going on in the U.S.
Isn't it sad, Jacob? Because when you look at, for example, Carmelo Anthony, and at this very hour in Texas, people are out there defending. I mean, it's very clear what this kid did. I mean, he killed an athlete, and it was all captured on video. You've got the Sarnaev brothers who blew up the Boston Marathon, and yet all these people are out there celebrating and defending these people.
Yeah, and I believe that this type of ideology honestly starts in the home. I think parents need to do a better job of disciplining their kids through love. Love shows discipline because you want the best for your kids. And if your kids fear the weight of their actions, that their parents are going to bring consequences on them, then they will do the same in America. I think that when you see a watered-down nuclear family, then you will see a watered-down American citizen that follows.
You know, I'm curious, Jacob, we've got about a minute here. As we look towards September 10th, the one-year anniversary of Charlie Kirk's assassination, where do you see the movement going, and are young people still engaged, or are they still motivated to be involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, well, I was in D.C. earlier this summer with 3,000 other students who are all starting or already had Turning Point chapters across the nation. So that in and of itself is super encouraging to bond together with these other students who feel the exact same way that I do. But even if it's just 5 students out of those 3,000 that continue the movement, that is what's important, is that there's people who are going to stand up, and now you're seeing families get involved through different ways through Turning Point. You're seeing Turning Point chase ballots and trying to flip elections. There's a lot of different ways that Turning Point is going about keeping this movement alive, keeping Charlie's legacy alive. I'm super excited for the future. There's going to be a lot down the pipeline.
Well, Jacob, we're so proud of you and the great work you're doing there at your college. Olivet Nazarene, did I get that right?
That is correct.
All right. I thought I remembered correctly. Olivet Nazarene, a great school. And we wish you nothing but the best this semester. And you don't be a stranger.
I will not. Thank you.
All right. Jacob York, everybody. And sure enough, we just retweeted him. Go and follow Jacob. If you can't find his name is Jacob York. Just go to my X page and you'll see that he retweeted, and you'll be able to give him a follower. a follow there. All right, hang tight, everybody. Hour two coming up next.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. Honored to have you with us today, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. By the way, in the last hour of the program, we were honored to get a call from our good buddy Jacob York, who is a student at Olivet Nazarene University. This young man was forced to flee his university campus for his life over serious threats in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And the university stood by this young man, did the right thing, and we just can't say enough good things about Olivet Nazarene University. Anyway, Jacob came onto our show and told the story, and it was so moving and so powerful that I knew we had to include it in the Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And Jacob just shared on social media, took a picture of himself with the book and where he was mentioned in the book, his great story. I want you to read Jacob's story. It is going to bless your heart. And it's just one of many in our great new book called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. By the way, if you have purchased the book, here's what I want you to do. Take a picture of yourself with it, post it on the socials, be sure to tag me, and we're going to share it with our, gosh, I think we've got well over a million people now that follow us on our combined social media platforms. So we're just so thankful for that. Hey, coming up a little bit later on this hour, our good buddy Jonathan Kahn is going to be here. He has a brand new book out called The Altar of Pergamum, and it is all about the mystery of the dark angel and the future of the world. So that's coming up in just a little while here on the program, this hour of the show. So you're going to want to be sure to join us for that. All right, can we talk about what's going on in the state of South Carolina right now? I'm going to rip the Band-Aid right off and say, you folks in South Carolina have a choice, Darlene Graham or Ralph Norman. Those are your choices for your next U.S. Senator on the Republican side of the ticket. I am endorsing Ralph Norman. Ralph Norman is the guy you need to get out there and vote for. Ralph has been a longtime friend of this program. Ralph Norman has been out there defending the America First movement. And even when President Trump, on those rare moments, has steered away from the conservative movement, Ralph Norman has been there to say, Mr. President, you got to keep it between the ditches. Ralph Norman's been that guy. I'm sure Darlene Graham is a very nice person. I don't know this lady. I don't think anybody really does. I don't even know if she's really a Republican. But that debate over, what is it, a couple of days ago on Newsmax, that was a debacle. And what I find fascinating is you've got a lot of folks out there in the conservative media world that are now providing cover for Darlene Graham. And that is incredibly concerning to me. So, and we're going to get to what Sean Hannity said in just a moment. But I want to go back. And here's the question, and by the way, Greta Van Susteren's very upset with all of you people. Greta says, how dare you point out the fact that Darlene Graham botched this question? Cut number 22.
National security questions. Well, Senator, are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? If so, why?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? And if so, why or how?
I'm just going to be honest here. I'm not on national security. I'm not that informed on national security. So, but I do support the military. My brother was in the Air Force for 33 years. So I will do everything I can to support the military. My dad was in the Army. I'm not a polished politician up here. National security is not my thing. not my area of expertise, but I do support the military.
Well, and I appreciate her honesty there, but in her honest answer, she shows why she is disqualified from serving the United States Senate. You know, this is not like on-the-job training here. You need to have knowledge about these issues, especially national security. But throughout the entire debate, her throwback was, well, I'm just going to trust President Trump. You can't trust anybody. You cannot. You have to think for yourself. And basically what she is telling the people is, I will be a rubber stamp for everything the president wants to do. Well, look, there may come a day where the president does something that may not square with what we believe. And yet Darlene Graham is going to be out there saying she is going to rubber stamp every single thing the president says. And then she called out Ralph Norman for not doing that. Well, Ralph Norman is a conservative. It was just a very odd debate. So anyway, Sean Hannity's out there, and here's what he had to say. He had Darlene Graham on, and Greta said that she regretted asking the question. Why? Why did you regret asking the question? It was a legitimate question. Or are you saying you regretted asking a question that she did not know the answer to that portrayed her in a bad light? Kind of makes you wonder if conservative media was trying to insert itself into the debate, and if conservative media, big conservative ink, has already picked Darlene Graham as their gal. So here's Hannity last night with Darlene Graham. And keep in mind, Lindsey Graham was a de facto co-host with Sean Hannity. It used to drive me nuts. Anyway, cut 28.
Yeah, you know, and to be fair, if people want to judge you on the South China Sea and Taiwan, okay, I think that's fair. But I bet, based on all your time with your brother, that you know probably everything about the Middle East, because you went on one trip after another to every country in the Middle East. And I know you know a lot about Europe and the Ukraine-Russia situation, because he went to Ukraine more than any other senator. And you even said in our interview that you were going to focus more on domestic issues than your brother did. I mean, you were very clear.
Absolutely. I know national security is important. We have a wonderful commander-in-chief. I know that we need to stand with the Israel, and the issues in Iran are serious. I understand all that. But again, I'm focused on the issues for everyday people in South Carolina that are struggling to make ends meet. So that's where I really want to focus. Another concern from the debate I have last night is my opponent said he was going to cut Social Security. That's very concerning to me. He also talked about creating a pathway for illegal immigrants. So that's another concern I have.
All right. Sean Hannity, you might remember, took AOC to task for the very same issue that he was throwing cover for Darlene Graham. Hannity dragged AOC for not knowing about Taiwan and basic global affairs. Cut 29.
Wow. Even worse than Hillary, though, Radical Squad leader AOC simply could not answer basic questions about global affairs. This is about, and the, so this issue of Taiwan came up last night, and I know people have made a big deal about it, and I'm like, I wonder how many people around the country, if I gave them a map, could pick out Taiwan. I don't think many, and not just in, I mean the whole country, never mind South Carolina.
So it just seems to me, ladies and gentlemen, that one of the biggest problems the conservative movement has right now is conservative media. I really do. I think we're watching a dumbing down of conservatism. This is a disturbing thing. We have seen, honestly, the most important thing on conservative cable broadcasting is that you be a hot chick with good-looking legs and good hair and a great makeup team. And if you're able to do that, boom, you get yourself a gig in conservative broadcasting. I mean, that's honestly, and when you look at some of these panels and what some of the pundits are saying, and you actually listen to their arguments, you're like, these people are as dumb as rocks. I mean, they're hot looking babes, but they're dumb as bricks. What's going on here? It's a fair question. I'm just saying. But anyway, the situation in South Carolina, a lot of folks very disturbed about Darlene Graham's performance in that debate, and it really exposed her for who we are. As a matter of fact, there's some audio. I'm not going to play this. It's just a little bit too difficult for you to hear. This morning, she was getting ready to do another interview, and her own handlers told the reporter, and you can barely hear it, but her own handlers told the reporter, nothing too difficult here. Keep the questions simple. So, ladies and gentlemen, you need to be asking yourself a question. Why is it that all of the establishment Republicans are wanting Darlene Graham to get this job? It makes you wonder. So President Trump's going to be out stumping for Darlene Graham. He's going to be doing a big rally tomorrow at Myrtle Beach. If I were the president, I'd cancel that thing. After what I saw happen at that debate, I would cancel and withdraw my endorsement. That's exactly what I would do. But to sit there and to have somebody who wants to serve in the Senate and say they don't know anything about Taiwan, that's disqualifying for me. Big time. Big time. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stern's radio show. We got to talk about Natalie Hart for just a moment. We were so slammed this week. Haven't had a chance to really do a deep dive into this. But you folks in Georgia, your senator is a piece of garbage crap. I'm talking about John Ossoff. President Trump calls him Pee Wee Herman. Anyway, Ossoff the other day was out on the campaign trail, and he was making some disparaging comments about the president. Cut number 21, please.
And while the sailors on the Lincoln fight his war, while he fruitlessly drains our munitions and oil reserves, the president sleeps through his meetings. He golfs and trades stocks. See, he doesn't want to do the job. He wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie on their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar.
Okay, so look, it's just nasty. Ossoff is, like I said, a piece of sludge. He's a piece of garbage. And quite frankly, President Trump would be well within his rights to deliver a response to this senator to the bridge of his nose. So Ossoff is insinuating that Natalie Harp, who's one of the president's top aides, that the president's having some sort of a relationship with Natalie Harp, suggesting that Natalie Harp is the president's side piece. And the media's loving this. They're lapping it all up. They're just loving it. As a matter of fact, CNN, Erin Burnett, who is a female piece of garbage, brought on Natalie Harp's estranged brother, who's a sleazeball, to discuss their relationship, her relationship with the president. Cut number 19.
You guys grew up in the same home, the same family, so you understand where she's coming from in a way that no one else does.
Yeah. I mean,
what do you think drew her to him?
Not her.
Yeah.
Well, my mom raised us with the idea that American exceptionalism was the correct way of looking at things. That the United States is the boss of the world, that, like, you know, slavery was back then, that was normal. People weren't bad because they had slaves. And honestly, and it's like Trump wants to take all those books out of schools. He wants to rewrite history. And so, like, I think that my sister, unfortunately, didn't break out of that delusion that my mom raised us with. And Trump is like everything that my mom taught us to respect. So I think that's where her infatuation for Trump comes from, honestly, because I don't think it's a physical attraction. Let's get real, you know, like personally, I don't think so.
All right. So the brother, by the way, looks like a homeless person, just a nut job. So anyway, President Trump asked about this during a White House press scrum. Cut number 20, please.
This question is, President John Ossoff said you'd rather travel with your aide, Natalie Harp, and build the ballroom than do your job as president. What is your response, John Ossoff?
You mean Pee Wee Herman? Pee Wee Herman lookalike? No, I would much rather do other things. It's a we're building a great facility here. We're fixing a White House that hasn't been taken care of. You can look at this. This room was a disgraceful situation, the Oval Office, and it was let go. The whole building, the White House, was let go. The exteriors were falling apart. The columns were falling apart. The whole place was a mess. In addition, they've been trying to get a ballroom for the last 150 years. And when I said I was going to build a ballroom, the military asked if they could see me. And they say, sir, we have an opportunity to go down deep into the ground and build a military facility to go to the White House and to go with all of Washington, D.C., which would be so valuable. And then they came up with a drone port on top, which would be a major drone port to protect the White House and all of D.C. And all of those things added up, and it became much more than just a ballroom.
So now Ossoff is out there, and he's saying that MAGA is having a meltdown over all of this and that the truth hurts. Well, there is no truth here. Ossoff, if he has evidence the president is cheating on the first lady, he should present that evidence. Otherwise, he should shut the H-E double hockey sticks up. Again, this guy is a piece of garbage. You folks in Georgia need to send this guy a message on Election Day by voting for Mike Collins. But Natalie Harp, by all estimations, is a devoted aide. There was a book, Maggie Haberman, out there, and she says that Natalie Harp is some sort she's obsessed with Trump, all this other kind of stuff. But the reality is she works 7 days a week. She works out of the Oval Office. She's got a regular seat on Marine One. She texts the president. She texts world leaders on the president's behalf, and she handles a lot of his social media postings. She's never out there in the public, so she's not doing this because of her. She's doing it because she's loyal to the president. And I don't get where the senator from Georgia comes off suggesting that she's having some sort of an inappropriate relationship. Quite frankly, it's a little sexist on the senator's part. I mean, that's crazy. But this is where we are right now, ladies and gentlemen. And you folks in Georgia have an opportunity to send Ossoff packing here. But Maggie Haberman, this is how she described her, a platinum blonde geyser of positivity there to buck him up when the going gets rough. She believes that he totally won the 2020 election. And in the book, Mr. Trump is described as explaining to people that Ms. Harp is the only one who loves him as much as his wife and children. Again, I don't read that in a bad way. It's just that she's a very loyal staffer, and the president loves loyalty. Caroline Levitt says Natalie Harp is one of the most loyal and hardest working aides on the president's team. And I agree with that. So anyway, what a disgusting thing the media is trying to do here. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Every Thursday, we are so honored to have our good buddy Harlan Akala on from Movement Mortgage. He is the reverse mortgage director, also the author of a terrific book called Home Equity and Reverse Mortgages, The Cinderella of the Baby Boomer Retirement. By the way, you can get a copy of that book and get more information about reverse mortgages at movement.com/Starnes. That's movement.com/Starnes. Harlan, hope you're doing well, my friend.
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to see you, Todd. I know you're fixing everything that's going on in the world, so I appreciate your continued work.
You know, every day I tell the team, let's go rile up America. Let's stir everybody up. And we try to do a pretty good job of that most days. Harlan, I love the topic we're going to be addressing today. You know, a lot of people very, very focused on paying off their house. They want to be debt-free. They want to get rid of that mortgage payment. But most people have really never done a deep dive with that particular question. Why do people want to pay off their houses?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, I grew up in the 60s and going to mortgage burning parties with my father in Wisconsin. And, you know, there's a lot of people that lost their homes, their farms during the Depression because they had mortgages back during, you know, the 20s, 30s, the aftermath of the Great Depression. And so because of that, mortgages got a bad name that you should hurry up and get rid of it so you don't lose your house. And that was very true. It's even in the movie It's a Wonderful Life that we watch at Christmas time, where the evil banker is taking people's houses away from them and kicking them out. And so everybody perceives that the safest thing to do is to pay off your house, which was very true back in that time period. But when reverse mortgages came into play in 1988 under Reagan, the whole sense of rules changed at that point. And now there's a safe way to live in your house without paying it off. And that's really, it goes back a long ways. And it's something, Todd, that people really have deep-seated emotional feelings about, because there's nothing quite as sacred as when you're living into retirement as being able to live in a house.
Harlan, I'm curious, do we have any idea of how many people over the age of 62 are still making mortgage payments?
You know, that's shocking. When my dad retired in 1981, less than 5% of people had any mortgage at all.
Oh, wow.
Today, more than 50%. So out of the 72 million people who are over 62, over 35 million people are still making mortgage payments.
Wow. So you're talking about people all the way up into, you know, their 70s and 80s?
70s, 80s. We ran into a client last week in their 90s. Lost her husband, still making a mortgage payment, trying to figure out how to buy food. She's living on $1,800 worth of Social Security, trying to pay a $700 mortgage payment.
So it's
crazy.
This is insane. But you're saying that most of these people do not have to make those payments because of a safe and guaranteed government program. What are we talking about here?
Well, what most people don't understand is Federal Housing Administration allowed many people, along with the VA Veterans Administration program, for people to get their first house. FHA also is designed for people like me to get their last house and to not have a mortgage. So when I reached 62, I had a regular mortgage payment, and I knew that as long as I had more than 50% equity, in fact, I had 70% equity, I was able to be in a situation where I did not have to make a mortgage payment. And I knew that because I was in the business. Many people don't know that, Todd. And so the FHA guarantees that if you have a significant amount of equity, that you can get a reverse mortgage and you do not have to worry about ever making that payment unless you want to for the rest of your life, guaranteed with FHA mortgage insurance. And there are so many people that are not even aware of that opportunity.
I'm curious, you know, you do a lot of public events. You're out there signing copies of your book. Somebody comes up to you and they say, you know what, I'm 62, 63, and I paid off my house. What's your reaction to those folks?
Well, it sometimes it comes across sarcastic, but it's not. It's meant to be funny and to get their attention. But I always say, oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. And immediately they say, why are you sorry to hear that? Isn't that a good thing? I said, well, it's not a bad thing. It's not foolish that you paid off your house. It's just that I feel sorry for you because now you have all of this equity in your house and you can't use any of it. It's all locked up in your house. So you can talk about it and say, I've got a $600,000 house. It's paid off. That's great because you don't have to make any payments, which is the main reason why people want to pay off their mortgage. So they don't have a payment. Well, I don't have my house paid off, but I don't have payments either. And so I tell them, did you know that you can actually use some of that money and have fun while you're alive and help your kids and your grandkids while you're alive? And that you don't, even if you can afford to pay off your house, is it really the smartest thing to do? Is it the most efficient thing to do? It was back in the 50s, but we didn't have computers back in the 50s either. And so really in today's world, everything changes from that.
Harlan, it seems to me, I heard you say, oh, you might want to use some of this money and go have some fun, maybe go on a vacation, do something. So this is really not a question in some cases of need.
That's the biggest thing that our entire industry, and that virtually every day. I was just talking to a client this morning. He said, just so you know, I don't need a reverse mortgage. And I said, yeah, I don't need one either. But I have one because I use it specifically to save taxes and have more money available to invest and help my kids and my grandkids. So it's not a question of need. It's a question of what is the safest and most efficient way to use any of your wealth in retirement. And that stops so many people. They say, I'm not broke yet. Well, you don't have to be broke to get a reverse mortgage. Your retirement car does not have to be smoking on the side of the road before you change oil. It's just something that you look at as, what's the best way to use my wealth? What's the best place to put my money? That same client that I was talking to today, he's making $1,750 payments for the next 25 years. And I said, do you realize that you're going to put out more than almost $500,000 into your house? Is that really what you want to do? Will your kids want your house when you pass? And he said, no, they'll probably sell it. And I said, well, that's exactly it. You're probably better off leaving them a Roth IRA or life insurance or whatever in a more effective way to do it. So what it really comes down to, Todd, is the efficiency. What's the smartest thing to do? And we're faced with that all the time. What's the best place to invest our money? What's the best house to buy? What's the best car to buy? We make that. I'm in the process of looking at a different car right now. So you look at a bunch of different cars. I'm spending more time researching my car than probably most people spend researching their retirement. And housing wealth is a huge issue that so many people take such little time to discuss. And that's what we do here, is we just spend a half hour, an hour with a client. And sometimes we tell them, hey, you're fine right where you're at. Just keep doing what you're doing. But that's really the issue, is take the time, spend the time to think about how does your housing wealth fit in, not only for your retirement and your spouse, but also for your children and your grandchildren.
I want you to write down this information, ladies and gentlemen. Grab something to write with. There's a telephone number and a website. Before I give those that information out, so say somebody calls 580-REVERSE, what's going to happen, Harlan, when somebody answers on the other line?
We'll immediately set up an appointment, sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes a half hour, an hour, depending upon the situation with the client and how complicated the scenario is, and just say, we're not going to sell you anything. We can't sell you anything. We won't sell you anything on an initial call. We'll just do a fact-finding scenario. Will this fit? Is everything that you're doing correct? Just a fact check on how your house is working in retirement and whether or not we can do something better. If we can't, we simply tell you. If we can help you and reduce your taxes, help your kids, whatever, then and only then do we go to the next step. But we always send you a copy of my book that you can read at your own leisure and say, how does this fit in? And does this make sense? And I need to know more about this.
All right.
That is exactly what we work on. It's not a sell thing that we, get them on the phone and do a timeshare presentation. No, not that there's any timeshare.
Yeah, no. That makes perfect sense. And again, this is not a hard sell, ladies and gentlemen. This is about starting the process and to see if this is going to fit for you. Here's the website address, movement.com/darns. That's movement.com/darns. Or you can call 580-REVERSE. That's 580-REVERSE. You'll ask for the book. They're going to send that to you. It will not cost you any money. Home Equity and Reverse Mortgages, The Cinderella of the Baby Boomer Retirement, which is, it's a great book to read, a free book for you, and a great resource as well as you begin this process. Harlan, always great information. Always look forward to this time every Thursday here on the program.
I enjoy it as well, Todd. And what I always tell people is, what you don't know can hurt you. And we make sure that you have all of the answers. So thanks for the opportunity to help your listeners.
Harlan Akala, everybody, from Movement Mortgage. He's the Reverse Mortgage Director. You're going to want to check this out. And again, there's no strings attached here. This is just about gathering information for your retirement. 580-REVERSE. That's 580-REVERSE, or the website movement.com/darns. And be sure to ask for a free copy of Home Equity and Reverse Mortgages, The Cinderella of the Baby Boomer Retirement. That gift is courtesy of us, so you don't have to pay any money for that at all. All right, we've got to take a quick break here, folks. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, Dylan, they've come out with a list, America's most dangerous cities for driving, and I'm going to go through the top 10 and see if, oh, is that me? Sorry, I'm playing music here. Oh,
ringing over there.
No, it's the Instagram. I hate these, you know, instead of just doing like a graphic, now everybody's doing the videos, and they add the music to it.
Yeah, as soon as you open up the app, it just starts playing.
Jeez, oh, Lou. Drives me nuts. I'm seeing if any of our, oh, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, you folks and listening to us on KXEL, apparently you guys are bad drivers. You're ranked number 19 on the list. Dallas, Texas is on the list. And Winston-Salem, WSJS. Come on, guys. You're ranked number 22 as one of the most dangerous cities to drive in. Let's see here. Here we go. The top 10. Well, wait a second. Mobile, Alabama. So you folks in Pascagoula, just stay away from Mobile.
I think they're listening to the Todd Stern Show, and they get distracted on the road.
That's it. You know, I'll say something, it makes them mad, and they hit the gas.
Or the brakes.
Or the horn.
Yeah.
Number 10, Charleston, South Carolina. Number 9, Miami Gardens, Florida. I think those are the senior saints down there.
Sure.
You know, the most dangerous place, honestly, the most dangerous, I'll tell you what the most dangerous place to drive in just a moment. It's not on the list. Number 8, Billings, Montana. I think that's because of the moose and the buffalo and whatever else. You know, they got big critters out there.
Yeah, bigger than cars.
Number 7, San Bernardino, California. I get that. Number 6, Kansas City, Missouri. Number 5, Tucson, Arizona. Number 4, Aurora, Colorado. Number 3, Waterbury, Connecticut. I'm kind of surprised there. Number 2, I'm shocked by this one. Knoxville, Tennessee.
I am not shocked by this one.
Really?
I know you're a big Tennessee guy, yeah. But I feel like that's a college town, if anything. So that's a bunch of young kids just driving around, just doing their thing over there.
Wow. All right. Are you ready for this one? The number 1 most dangerous city for driving in America. We need a drum roll. We don't have a drum roll.
No, I don't. Yeah. I'll do that.
All right. That makes it sound like we're poor.
Okay.
Well, we're not that poor.
We're not poor. I could probably find one if you give me 5 minutes. We don't have 5 minutes.
The number 1 most dangerous city for driving in America, Memphis, Tennessee. Oh, my gosh.
Dang it.
That is more than accurate.
Yeah, it's very true.
You know, it's true. You can't even, like, honk your. This is what gets me is that people are on their cell phones at these stoplights, and the light turns green, and nobody's moving.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? What do you do when you're sitting there? And how long do you wait before you tap your horn?
I give it a good second and a half.
Oh, wow.
You go longer?
No, I don't. I try not to honk my horn because if you honk your horn, they're going to flash a piece at you.
This is true. I mean, you know, maybe you don't honk your horn. What do? You just sit there.
I think, you know, here's the problem. We need an alternative to the horn. We need a secondary horn alert system in the car that designates itself as the love tap.
Well, some would argue that the flashing lights, like your brights, that could be a second option. But now you can't do that in Memphis either because the gangs.
The gangs.
Yeah, they take that as a, okay, I'm going to come for your car now.
They're like, oh, there's little Todd.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know what it could be. I agree with you. There should be something that's less offensive.
Maybe instead of a honk, honk, it's like love tap, love tap. You know, just something gentle.
Yeah.
That's all.
Helen says we need Teslas so you can modify the horn. It could be anything you want.
Wait, you can modify a horn on a Tesla? What?
But the most times I see people do it, it's a train horn. So they don't make it better. It's just worse.
I will say this, and I would actually do this knowing I would probably get shot. I would, if I could, I would have Dixie, like the General Lee, I would have that as my horn.
Yeah, that might be the worst thing that you could do in Memphis.
Ride through Orange Mound playing Dixie.
Just to troll them.
The rebels are coming. The rebels are coming. Hee-hoo!
Yeah, Yeah, you go ahead, Todd. You try that out. Let me know how it goes.
You know, the people always ask us, how did Ben Dieter, you know, who is doing so great in Washington, now he's like a comms director up on Capitol Hill. But, you know, he's a fast little fella.
Yep.
He runs all the races and wins, and people are like, how is it that white guy runs so fast? And I just tell people, well, you know, when he was in Memphis, we would take him to Orange Mound and drop him off right at dusk and say, see you back at the station.
Pretty much. And he lived the downtown area, so he didn't, you know, he wasn't too far from the crime.
The only other, I will say this, Gainesville, Georgia, you guys have some traffic issues there. I love you people. It's one of my favorite places, but we've got some traffic problems in Gainesville. The worst is when you get stuck behind the chicken trucks.
Oh, boy.
And here's how it was. I was on a mountain pass, and it happened. And I am telling you, I was literally right behind the chicken truck, and there were feathers getting sucked up into the air conditioning.
Oh, you're talking about an actual chicken truck with chickens.
Yeah, with chickens.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about like a food truck.
No, with chickens.
All right. That's
Let's go to Melissa, Houston, Texas. Melissa, what's on your mind? What do you think about this list?
Hi, good afternoon, Todd. I am shocked that Houston, Texas did not make the list.
Yeah, Lubbock. Yeah, Texas had Lubbock, Odessa, and Dallas, but not Houston.
Houston is crazy. I'm scared to get in my car in some parts of the cities, and you don't dare honk your horn for fear of getting shot by somebody.
Oh, yeah, that's us in Memphis, too.
So, crazy.
Wow. Yeah, yes, it is crazy. But yeah, that's according to the survey, the only bad drivers there. This is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And I think this is the number of dead people on the roadway. So I guess fewer people are dying in Houston on the roads than, say, Dallas.
Are the ones that they're just not wanting to tell us about.
Well, or that could be too, Melissa.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Great show, Todd, and I'm glad you're back.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great to be back. I hate being away, and my voice, I don't want to subject you guys to the voice. Nobody wants to hear the gravel for a couple of hours, but it is great to be back, Melissa. All right, ladies and gentlemen, are you buying the list here, the most dangerous traffic cities in America? 901-260-5926. We'll be right back, everybody.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Hour three of the big show underway. Great to have you guys with us today. I want you to write down our telephone number. You will need this if you plan on calling into the show. That's 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Well, after more than a decade, the altar scripture calls the throne of Satan is reopening to the public. And Jonathan Cahn has written an incredible book that the world needs to read before it does. This is a fascinating book called The Altar of Pergamon, The Mystery of the Dark Angel, and the Future of the World. And Rabbi Jonathan Cahn joins us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. My friend, it is great to see you again. It has been far too long, and congratulations on the new book project.
Thank you, Todd. Always great to be back with you.
You know, before we get started on this, I just wanted to gauge your thought. We've been talking a lot about what's been happening in our country, the chaos in the culture, the fact that you have hundreds of women that are marching and celebrating a woman who killed her own three children. You have people celebrating death and evil across our nation. I believe in demons, Jonathan Cahn, and I just... something tells me that we are dealing with a very oppressive, evil, demonic spirit here in the United States of America. What say you to that?
Yeah, the ultimate thing is if you remove God from the culture, you know, the is a principle from the scripture. The house is not going to stay empty. What other things will come in? So when you turn away from God, I mean, look what happened when, speaking of this mystery, when Germany turned away from God. You have these Christian, it's worse for a Christian nation to turn away from God. So when you do that, you open up the house for other things. You know, Jesus spoke about the man who was delivered of demonic spirits, and he stays empty, and they come back in. Well, that's what happens. You cannot remove God from a culture and not get that. So right now we have people who have God in America, but we also have a lot of people who have taken God out, and that leads to death. And so we shouldn't be surprised, but it is crazy. It is not rational, but it is what the Bible says.
I want to get to the book. For over a decade, this altar has been sealed from the public in Berlin, inside a museum, which is undergoing a renovation. The doors reopen in 2027. And
yes.
I understand the altar is so ominous that the Apostle John identified it in Revelation as the throne of Satan. You say the timing of all of this is not coincidental. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, first, I didn't even know what you just said. I didn't even, when I was led to write the book, I always pray, Lord, what do you want me to write? When I was led to do the altar of Hermon, I had no idea that at that moment that it's going to be reopened during this time. But the thing is that the amazing thing is wherever the altar goes or whatever happens to the altar, something happens in the world. And this mystery, Todd, I mean, I've written several books. This one is so, it's the mystery is so colossal that it has altered the history of the world. I mean, literally, it's behind everything from the rise of Adolf Hitler to the Marxism, communism, socialism that we're dealing with right now, the Cold War, the World War I, World War II, the nuclear destruction, even a new world order, even a link to it, the internet. And there, I don't know that I'll say it on the air, but there's even a link to an American leader, not Trump, that is linked to the altar of Pergamon and the throne of Satan. So whatever happens with this thing, it touches the world, literally.
So let's talk about give us a little bit of taste of this mystery and what the altar actually reveals.
Yes. Yeah, there is in Revelation, as you alluded to, it says the Pergamon where the throne of Satan is. I mean, it's pretty strong to identify that. Well, there's the altar is the center of Pergamon. So there was this massive altar. And the amazing thing is for ages, it was underground. It was in ruins. But what would happen if this would be uncovered? I mean, and Todd, this is going to sound like an Indiana Jones thing, or it's going to sound like the Lord of the Rings, but it's real. It's real. In fact, everybody who's listening right now, your life has been impacted by this, literally. So here's what happens. In the 1900s, actually in 1871, a guy from Europe stumbles on it. He sends pieces of the altar back to his homeland, and that his homeland is going to be linked now to the throne of Satan. And that is, what was his homeland? Homeland is Germany. So now Germany is going to be linked to this. Germany actually comes into the world, by the way, in 1871. That's when the nation comes in. Same moment that the throne of Satan is returning to the world. And the thing is that, so not only, think about where this is going to lead. But then Germany starts digging up the altar. They start transferring it from Pergamon to Berlin. So now, at the same moment, there's an explosion of anti-Semitism in Germany. In fact, the word anti-Semitism comes into the world just as the altar comes to Germany at the same moment, same year. And then, Todd, they start piecing the altar back together again. For the first time, it appears in the world for the first time since ages. That's 1889. Same moment, something else comes into the world. A baby is born who is named Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler comes into the world with the altar, with the throne of Satan.
So Hitler comes to power, and I want to kind of fast forward. I want to give away the secrets of the book, and folks, you can pre-order the book right now, The Altar of Pergamon. Hitler comes to power. What was it about the altar that opened really a colossal mystery of evil?
Yeah, two things. One is when Hitler comes to power, he demands that they build him this massive podium to speak to the masses. When you see him raging at Nuremberg, he's standing on that thing. Well, his architect, Albert Speer, builds him this podium. And you know what it is? He chose to make the podium of Hitler the reproduction of the altar of Pergamon. So literally, Hitler is standing on the throne of Satan. You can't make this up. He's standing on the throne of Satan. And the altar of Pergamon was a certain kind of altar. It was the altar of burnt offerings. The way you say that in the language of the Greeks who built the altar, burnt offering is the word kaustos in Greek and the word halos, which means entire, comes together, makes the word Holocaust. It's the altar of the Holocaust. And so the mystery of the Holocaust is there from the beginning.
Rabbi Jonathan Kahn joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. And again, the name of the new book, The Altar of Pergamon, The Mystery of the Dark Angel and the Future of the World, which you need to read this book in advance of this this exhibit being opened up in 2027. This is, you're right, it's sort of very Indiana Jones-esque. So Hitler, yeah. Hitler dies. Yeah. What happens to the altar at that point?
Okay. At the altar is going to pass into the hands of another power. And so what power? What happens is, as Hitler dies, the very next day, soldiers come upon this other bunker. They find the throne of Satan. They are the soldiers of the Red Army. So now the altar of the throne of Satan goes from the Third Reich to the Soviet Union. And so, I mean, again, you know, in the Soviet Union, all of a sudden is empowered, superpower. Communism spreads across the world, and they have the throne of Satan. I mean, and literally, the world is divided now. And, you know, what the Bible, the word devil comes from diabolos. It means the divider. And so what happens? The world's divided from where? From Berlin, from the throne of Satan. And literally now you almost have the world come to the edge of destruction. I'll just tell you this. There's so much stuff, Todd, but I'll just tell you this one thing. When in 1962, we almost came to destruction with the Cuban Missile Crisis. But the crisis actually didn't begin in Cuba. It began with missiles that were across the Black Sea towards Russia. And so that's what started it all. And where were those missiles? They were in the land of Pergamon. They were, and they actually were Jupiter missiles, the name of the god of Pergamon, you know. And so we're almost destroyed. This is how real this is. I'm just fast forwarding to go quick. What happens is that if you go to now 1989, the wall comes down. Communism loses the throne of Satan. What happens to Russia? Soviet Union disappears. The Soviet bloc disappears. And now you have a whole new movement because Berlin becomes one. And now there's a new movement for one world. And so if the enemy could not destroy the world by dividing it, now it's going to converge with end time prophecy. And you have the birth of the European Union at the same time. So now we're dealing with end time prophecy. But this is, so we're now moving to a whole nother stage. And by the way, I'm just throwing it in real quick because there's so much. But an American leader, he is not Trump, but he's very famous. He goes to the place of Satan's throne in Berlin, makes a speech to the world, comes back to America, begins a rise to power. And the thing is, behind him, they build this strange structure and behind this guy. And what they built without knowing it, or they did, is a reproduction of the altar of Pergamon in America. And I'm not going to name the guy, but you may figure it out.
So are you telling me that Barack Hussein Obama, his museum is built, is designed like the altar of Pergamon?
I didn't say that. You did. But listen, God,
oh my
his power,
God.
When you remember that thing, remember what was behind him, a strange thing. They said it was a Greek temple.
Yeah.
That was a reproduction of the altar of Pergamon, the throne of Satan. And what's been happening with America, or the West, has been de-Christianizing. So we are in a whole new stage. And so that's why it's also called the mystery of the dark angel and the future of the world, because this is heading to where we are all heading right now. This has to do with the past, present, future.
It does seem, and we're talking to Rabbi Jonathan Kahn today, and the new book coming out, The Altar of Pergamon, where we're going to tell you where you can get a copy of that in just a moment. It just does seem we're in a weird place in American history, world history, where we seem to be careening towards something. It's just sort of an unease. I mean, look, my hope is in Jesus Christ, so I'm not scared, but it just does seem a little unsettling that we're going to some place that is very bad.
You're right. I mean, you're putting your finger on it. You know, it's almost like there's a sense of that. And it's almost like we think about Germany before Hitler. That was the sense there. You had rise of socialism, rise of anti-Semitism. You had an unease that things were changing. They were moving away from God. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. We are heading to something. Now, whether whether 2027 with this, you know, with the opening of this, because every time it's been open, something happened. Whether that's part of it, we'll see. But you're totally right. That's why we have our faith in God, and we are not, you know. And the other thing is this: listen, if this is telling how real the enemy is, that this is telling how real God is, and we are on the winning side, you know, on this. And the other thing, Todd, is I don't know if you know, but I wrote this as a novel, like the Harbinger, because it's like a thriller to reach people who don't know the Lord, because that's why we're here. So I'm praying people get it, not just for themselves, but get it for people who need to know the Lord, because they'll be drawn into it. But you're totally right. We are heading to something, and the sense is palpable.
Let's talk about where people can get a copy of the Ultra Program. Where do you want to send people for that?
Yeah, you can go anywhere. If you go online right now to Amazon or anywhere where you get books, you're going to see it, the Ultra Pergament. You can also go to jonathanconbooks.com, but you can get it anywhere. Barnes & Noble is going to have it. It's going to be literally everywhere. So just as long as it says the mystery of the dark angel, the future of the world. But also, again, if there's people in your life, that's my hope, and that's for it. And Todd, listen, it was a joy to be with you. You went farther than I was going to go.
Wow. Well, you know, we do that here, Jonathan. I mean, this is fascinating. It was a great read, and I appreciate you sending me the advanced copy. It was a page turner, and I have no doubt another New York Times bestseller on your hands. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, Todd. God bless you.
All right. God bless you. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, his book coming out in September. You can pre-order a copy of the Ultra of Pergamum, The Mystery of the Dark Angel and the Future of the World. Is that not bizarre that Obama's museum, the big edifice there, which looks like the Death Star, was actually designed to look like the Ultra of Pergamum? Oh, my gosh. That's insane. All right, we've got to take a break here, folks. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stern's Radio Show. And just scrolling through some of the, I've got a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America, and just scrolling through some of the chapters during the break, and just amazing stories about President Trump and the work he has done based on our many interviews that we've done with the president. And I certainly hope that you would pick up a copy today at your favorite bookstore, Amazon, wherever you make it convenient, based on the most dangerous driving cities in America. You might be better off just having it delivered. Just saying. Dylan, I have a question for you. So when you were in school, were you a pretty regular attender of school?
I would say that I attended every single day if I wasn't deathly sick. Yeah.
Did you get any like prizes or anything? You know, some kids, they never miss at all.
I never got any prizes personally.
All right. So you weren't one of the, you weren't a truant, right? So you didn't skip school.
I didn't skip any school unless it was like a school senior skip day, which like, you know, that doesn't really count.
So no, right. So you were basically a good kid. You went to school and you went to class.
Yeah.
What would have happened if you were, you know, got caught skipping out?
Oh, I think my parents would probably like hold my hand and make me apologize to the principal as I walked back into the school.
Who was the disciplinarian in your family? Your mom?
Definitely my dad. Whoa. I was actually excited when my mom was the only one disciplining me. I can say this now because I'm an adult. But she would always get the ruler out instead of a belt, and the ruler hurt way less than a belt.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You see, was the ruler to the butt or to the knuckles?
It was like on the arm. It was not even to the butt. If it was on the butt, it might have hurt more, but I was definitely more scared of my dad.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this story out of Detroit, Michigan. Students in Detroit, Michigan can now earn a paycheck simply by going to school. The school district announcing that high school kids who log perfect attendance records every week will get $100 a week. So if
you're kidding me.
No, I am serious. And this is all your tax money. So if you go to school Monday through Friday, you get a paycheck.
I would be a millionaire after high school. Like, what? Are you serious?
Yeah, middle schoolers get $50.
A middle schooler doesn't need $50.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I can only imagine what they're buying with the money.
Seriously.
The school district hopes that by paying students to attend class, it'll cut down on chronic absenteeism. So get this. During the last school year, more than 60% of students missed at least 10% of the school year.
That's terrible.
That's a lot of sick days.
This had to be like one of those last ditch efforts ideas in the council meetings. It had to be like, all right, what if we just pay them?
No, I guess what they were standing outside, I guess, handing out cartons of Little Debbies, and I guess that wasn't doing it.
The $2 Doritos wasn't really cutting
it. No, that wasn't doing it. Back in the 1980s, though, I remember this, 70s and 80s, when I went to school, we did not have this problem with kids cutting class. We did not. That's because the parents were on hand to put the fear of Almighty God in their kids. And I remember there were moms more than willing to hunt you down. If they got the call from school saying, little Todd is not in class, you better believe mom was in the blue Oldsmobile and she was hunting me down. I never skipped school. I was too scared, too afraid. I mean, could you imagine? Jeez, Lou. Anyway, they're now paying kids to go to school in Detroit, Michigan. 901-260-5926. I think the only person allowed to miss was Ferris Bueller, right? Bueller. All right, let's go to Tom in Houston, Texas, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm hearing you talking about getting the disciplinary actions in school. Well, I was lucky. I got to go to Catholic school.
Oh, boy.
And in the fourth grade, there were a few of us in the boys' room doing stuff we shouldn't have been doing. And the headmaster, principal, whatever you call, was Sister Gracilia. And she was from Germany, about 6'2" and 210 to 230 pounds. We called her Sister Gorilla. And she carried us into the office, and all of us got to, she had that board, you know, with the holes cut in it.
Oh, the Board of Education, yeah.
Yeah, like Swiss cheese, you know? And, well, she did a number on us, I'll tell you that.
Kind of like a German version of Medea.
Okay, yeah.
She put the shut to the up.
And now there's another thing. I talked to the lady yesterday and asked her to pass along to the music man there. We need to get some ZZ Top on the break. Because, you know, good old Frank Beard, he left us Monday.
You know, and, you're right.
He was the drummer, and he was the only guy in ZZ Top that did not have a beard. But I want to suggest the song Outlaw X. Do you know what that song is, Todd?
Tom, I do not. I'm not a big ZZ Top guy, but I'll pass that along to Dylan.
You'll enjoy it because it refers to the illegal radio station that used to be out in the Gulf Coast and down in Mexico.
Oh.
Back on the AM dial when they would blast 700,000 watts of power.
Oh, geez, Lord.
And could be heard all over the country. This is where Wolfman Jack got his bones made back in the day. And they would blast on these super powerful AM radios that were illegal in the United States. Well, they just took them to Mexico. That's all they did.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what. We're gonna get that in the mix. DJ Dill is going to be spinning tunes tomorrow on the show. So we'll be sure to get that into the mix. And I sure do appreciate you calling in. What did he call the nun gorilla?
What got me is he said she carried them into the office. Carried. I'm thinking, did she physically pick them up?
I guarantee you. Just or dragged them.
Yeah. Just trying to imagine that.
Those Catholic nuns. We were terrified of them, and we're Baptist.
It's true.
All right, let's go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Say hello to our good friend Kyle Campbell, host of the Politically Basic podcast, and you can follow Kyle on Instagram and TikTok all over the place. Kyle, hope you're doing well.
I am doing well because the kids are back in school, sir. I hope you're doing well too.
Yeah, so we were just sharing this story out of Detroit, and Kyle, apparently they have a problem with truancy, and so now they're going to pay the kids $100 a week if they have perfect attendance. $100 a week. Back when I was a kid, we had a mom with a frying pan to make sure we went to class.
Well, I don't know what they're doing. It sounds a little backwards, but I do know that the truancy is an issue. The disciplinary, you know, duties have been passed on to now the teachers, so the parents don't want to do it. They dump the kids off at school and say, "You guys deal with it." So I don't know. Maybe it's going to work. We'll see. But I don't know how far $100 is going to go these days. These kids might be over it. We'll see.
We've been following this story out of Massachusetts, this horrible story of the mom, Lindsay Clancy, who admits to killing her three children. And for me, I mean, it's just a horrible story all around. But Kyle, what's even more shocking are the number of women who are outside the courtroom, and they're defending this woman. They're cheering for her. I want to play some audio of some of the ladies that are out there defending Lindsay Clancy. Cut 31.
You know, one of my sister-in-laws, it could be one of my best friends, and it could be me. So just here to support.
We are hearing her. We see that she tried everything. And I really do believe that she went into a state of psychosis.
We feel like the system failed her. She was begging for help, and no one was there. I don't know if us being here will make her feel any better, but I mean, she's living in hell right now.
So I'm not sure, you know, if we're supposed to be comforted in the fact that these women are out there saying, well, it could have been me. I could have killed my kids. If I'm the kids, I'm like locking the door at nighttime. That's crazy stuff.
It's crazy, but I'm actually not surprised, Todd, that this is striking such a chord with women across the country. When you really look into what happens to mothers when they give birth, the postpartum care that you receive is almost non-existent. I think this case is really bringing out people's disappointment with the medical community in, of course, how they handled Lindsay Clancy, a woman who did ask for help, who did express, feelings that should have been, you know, she should have been dealt with. There were a number of times along her history where she spoke to someone about it, and there were failure after failure in getting her the help that she needed. It is shocking to see all these women say these things, but I think it really comes back to, having the medical community take a look here. It's not just that you have a baby and you're fine, or you have postpartum depression or psychosis. There is a range of emotional regulation that has to happen, hormonal regulation that has to happen, and we're just not addressing it in this country. So this case is horrific. It seems like she did what she's, you know, told the defense and told the judge and this jury that she's done. But I think there's a lot to learn from this, and that's what we're hearing from all of these women who are supporting her.
Well, if there was, and we had a caller earlier who suggested that maybe the medicine she was on may have, you know, contributed to this, and this is medicine that some of the school killers, these mass shooting people have been taking. And I don't know about that, but if that is the case, then I think we need to start taking a long, hard look at those people, too. There needs to be accountability within the pharmaceutical industry as well. I just think this country is far too medicated for its own good. And you have to wonder, okay, do we start holding those people accountable as well?
I think you're spot on right there, Todd. I think we are completely over-medicated. I was going to use that exact terminology. And two, these are medications being prescribed from different doctors. So where is the, you know, guidance? Where is the do no harm medical ethics of this in terms of just catching these issues, or anyone in this woman's life who checked the medicine cabinet? Where was her husband in this? And I think that's also where he is coming into play, and people are scrutinizing his actions, right? Is how did you let it get to this point? Weren't you ever worried? So it's bringing up a lot of good points. I think you're exactly right, though. We've got to scale this back.
All right. Another story we've been following. This is Sean Duffy, our transportation secretary. You know, he and Rachel Campos Duffy, Fox News host, They actually met doing reality TV, what, years ago. And anyway, they're doing some sort of a reality TV thing now. This is a conversation that Duffy's having with his daughter. She wants to go to Harvard, and he says, not going to happen. Cut 30, please.
Can't say no.
To Harvard?
Yeah.
Well, me and Mom can say no.
Catholicism, to us, is everything. It's the basis of our marriage. It's the basis of our family. So I'm nervous about the idea of Paloma going to Harvard. We spend a lot of time nurturing and providing formation for our kids, giving them an environment where they are steeped in faith and values. And so the idea of dropping her off at a place that would undermine that or try to undo all those things makes me worried.
And again, I don't want them to get one viewpoint. I want them to get a lot of different viewpoints. But I don't want them fed only one viewpoint that's contrary to the way my kids were raised. Listen, my problem is we have thought about how we've raised you and how hard we've worked to, I think, raise what is a remarkable young girl. If I send you there, I think what happens is they have professionalized, figuring out how they can take good young girls like you and, I think, corrupt their minds. You don't have to believe what I believe. You don't have to have the political viewpoints that I have. But I do think it's important that you make those choices for yourself and you have a fair representation of what they are. And I don't think the Harvards of the world give you that kind of well-rounded picture.
Kyle, what do you think about that?
Well, I think they're right. And sadly, our institutions of higher education, particularly the Ivy Leagues that have a ton of money and tend to certainly lean more liberal, they have become in recent years these sort of indoctrination camps. I think the Duffys are spot on. They're media savvy people, right? Like you, Todd, they get it. They've been in that world and they can see and have access to things that maybe other, you know, other parents thinking, wow, Harvard, you're going to get a great degree. You're going to have all these doors open to you. I think they can see past that. And they know how vulnerable our kids' minds are. Even if you've had all of the great foundations at home, you have a father in the administration, you know, you can still, they can still get to you. So I think they're really wise to do that. Plus it's expensive as stink. And who wants to pay $100,000 a year to have your kids completely unwound from all of that good teaching that you've brought them up with?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to have sweet, beautiful Paloma coming home from, you know, fall break. And now she's a man who goes by the name Paul. I mean, you know, nobody wants to see that. It's true. I get it. Before we let you go, I was in Southern California and I was speaking at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, and then went up that evening to Lancaster Baptist Church, which is in the high desert in the same area of Southern California. So it was like super hot and humid in Chino Hills. But when I got up to Lancaster and got out of my car, it was like 120 degrees. I don't know how you guys survived there, Kyle. I don't get that.
Well, I grew up near there. So you do adjust, but you can't go back. You can't just pop in. It's not like your body's not used to that humidity that you get where you live all the time, Todd. But I will say, I streamed that service there at Lancaster Baptist. I loved it. I loved that our friend Pastor Chapel gave you the good microphone and you sounded wonderful on it.
Watching.
I need you to prep a little bit better for the next time you come out and see us. It's one of the beautiful things about California. We have every single climate here. We want you ready for all of them on your next visit. That's your homework.
And I say that because it's like 104 degrees here in Memphis. It is so hot and oppressively humid. And someone just posted a photograph. They're literally driving their car with wearing oven mittens. And I love this. Yes. What a great idea.
Yeah, it's survival mode for sure. Well, I wish you great safety and cool air conditioning, my friend.
Well, thank you. And no, we're going to be back. I'll be speaking at Lancaster later in September. We're bringing the book tour to the high desert there and the Antelope Valley. And of course, this coming Friday, we're going to be at First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas, our good friend Robert Jeffers. So it's really a lot of fun to meet so many of our great listeners and readers all over the country. Kyle, always fun having you on the show.
Always love being on the show. Thanks for having me, and I know I'll see you soon.
All right. There you go, folks. Kyle Campbell, host of the Politically Basic podcast. be sure to check out all of her great work and her podcast. I want to go back to this story out of Massachusetts, Lindsay Clancy. And Dylan, can you imagine, though, you're sitting there and these women are being interviewed for TV. Can we just play that clip again, Cut 31?
You know, one of my sister-in-laws, it could be one of my best friends, and it could be me. So just
okay, stop right there. So this woman is saying, yeah, you know, my sister-in-law could have knocked off her three kids, or my neighbors, or even me. I could have killed my kids. Imagine you're sitting there after family dinner, and you're in the living room, and you're watching TV, and you hear your mother say that she could possibly have killed you.
I would be a little bit terrified of mommy at that point.
Right? I'm locking I'm changing the locks on the bedroom door. I mean, at that point, you're wondering, all right, what was that funny taste in the spaghetti? I don't think that was oregano.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But to show you, though, I mean, again, this is a generation of women who are slap crazy nuts. They've been ruined. They've been ruined by the education system. They've been ruined by culture and society. I want you to listen. These women are going out into the woods, and they are having what they call rage retreats. These are women. I want you to listen to this. Cut 32.
Right now, I feel. What do you feel?
I feel scared. Lord. Are they beating each other with sticks?
Give it to them! What did they try to take?
Dylan, I'm scared.
That's got to be what hell sounds like.
Hold on.
Got to be.
Hold on. Woman, go make me a sandwich! Yeah, that'll do it. Where's my laundry, woman? Oh, God. That's not good. Where's my Trump hat? Stop. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, let's try to work in a quick call here. Dawsonville, Georgia. John, listening to us on WDUN. Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. I was wanting to say about this postpartum syndrome. When did that become a thing? Because, I mean, I'm 70 years old, and I don't ever remember that hearing anything about that when I was growing up. And my mom had seven kids, and all my aunts had three or more kids.
And they didn't kill them?
No, and all my sisters had three or more kids, and my wife's had three kids, and I have, you know, I'm just like, when did that become a big thing?
I think right around peanut allergies and maybe the gluten-free stuff. Because you're right, I don't remember any of this when I was a kid. I will say this, that they say it's very rare, that it is a thing, but it is incredibly rare for a woman to go through something like that, and you know, after she gives birth. So, but again, I'm with you. I never heard about those kinds of things, you know, growing up as a kid.
Yeah, me either. Mm. No peanut allergies, none of that stuff.
No, you know, isn't that weird? I was wondering about that because now just about everybody's got a peanut allergy, and I know this because I'm on enough airplane flights where you're not allowed to eat peanuts, and they make the announcement. And I've always wondered, because when I was a kid, honest to goodness, I think everybody ate peanut butter and jelly. Everybody seemed to be well. I don't recall anybody keeling over, but
I don't know what the world's coming to, Todd.
It's coming to an end, my friend, according to the book of Revelation. It's coming to an end. John, thank you for that call. Dylan, who are we going to get the most angry phone calls from? The peanut allergy people or the gluten-free crowd?
Something tells me it's the gluten-free crowd.
You see,
I know.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Or the cyclist.
Oh, my gosh. Don't mess with those folks.
Oh, we've got to talk about that tomorrow. I actually angered the cycling community.
They come in groups, Todd. You can't mess with them.
No. I'm not sure what they've got, but they rage. All right, folks, we're going to leave it there tomorrow. Open line Friday. Sunday, First Baptist Church, Dallas. Hope to see you there. Lord knows I need to go to church. Have a good one, everybody.